You makes a hole in the mud with your toe. You drops the one tiny little rice seed in the hole. Then you closes the hole with the heel of your foot. Toe, plant, heel. All day long, bending over, knee-deep in swamp water.
Cato coughed once more and looked down at the ground.
And that's just the first part. Then you gotta tend to the plants and flood the fields and cut the stacks and thresh the seeds. Seem like it'd go on forever. That's what be in your future, Miss Africa. And when he gets old enough, this here boy's future too.
Polly looked at Cato in disbelief.
They'd put Tidbit out there?
She asked, horrified. The thought of little Tidbit sweating and working in the dangerous swampy water made Polly feel ill. Amari put her hand to her mouth, barely holding back a sob.
What to do?
She finally asked. Cato shrugged.
It might help if Miss Isabel like you. But she ain't got no say-so over much round here. I suppose you gotta keep on making yourself useful in Master Clay's bedroom. That'd be all any slave woman can do,
Cato explained sadly.
Lessen she run away.
At that moment, they heard a blood-curdling scream coming from one of the slaves in the rice field. Cato moved astonishingly quickly for an old man, and he hurried down to see what happened. Polly, Amari, and Tidbit followed.
Oh, my lord! Copperhead!
A slave named Jacob cried hoarsely.
My heel did been snake bit.
Polly watched horrified as Jacob emerged from the swampy mud, carrying Hildy's limp body to the shore. He laid her gently on the grass. Polly could barely see the two small wounds on her leg. There was very little blood. Some of the slave women quickly daubed her leg with mud and wrapped it tightly with strips of cloth ripped from their own dresses. The woman's eyelids fluttered. She called for her husband, then she arched her back and was still.
She be dead?
Amari asked, her voice barely a whisper. Tidbit, for once, was still and quiet.
Not yet,
Cato replied quietly.
Just passed out. But the poison likely to kill her by sunset. Copperhead don't play.
Cato looked directly at Amari as he spoke again.
Two dead a snake bite this season. Two more died of the malaria. One gator bite. One drowned. Do whatever you can to stay out of this here place, gal. You hear?
Amari looked terrified, Polly thought, and rightfully so. As they left the rice fields, Polly could hear the workers being called back to work. No free time just because of a little snake bite. Chapter 22. Lashed with a Whip. When Polly and Amari returned to Teeny's kitchen, both of them clearly upset, Teeny didn't seem the least bit surprised.
How's Hildy?
She asked as she pulled Tidbit close to her.
Cato told us she might die,
Polly replied, tucking her shaking hands under her arms. Then she asked,
How did you know?
I declare, child, you ought to know by now that it don't take long for news to travel around here,
Teeny said.
So did Cato also scare you about how gals like mine are here be ending up in the rice fields?
Polly nodded, then frowned. This time last year, when she was back in Beaufort with her folks, she wouldn't have given a second thought to a slave going to work in the rice fields. That's what a slave was supposed to do. Who cared about the feelings of an ignorant slave anyway? But this was someone she knew, maybe even felt sorry for. Somehow that made a difference.
Cato speaks true, Teeny said solemnly, but I got an idea. Let's see what we can do. The two of you go out back and wash yourself. Get back in here real quick-like.
The two girls returned with clean faces and hands, and Teeny handed them each an outfit worn by the house-serving maids. Flora, one of the serving gals, is Hildy's daughter.
She done run down there to see her mama, Teeny explained. Master don't allow such behavior, but he don't know yet. So you two gonna take her place at supper.
Polly and Amari exchanged looks of surprise.
Polly, you do just what Lena, the head serving gal, tells you to do. Say nothing except for yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. Mina, you copy everything they do and act like you know what you're doing. You understanding all this, gal?
Polly was pleased that Amari replied as she had been taught, yes, Teeny, but she was thrilled about the chance to go to work in the big house, finally. Teeny looked worried, however.
Don't you drop nothing, you hear? Now get, she told them.
Polly changed quickly into the stiff black uniform, inwardly praying that perhaps this would be the start of her move up to the main house and out of the kitchen with the slaves. She then helped Amari tie the sash on her apron. Tidbit laughed out loud when he saw the two girls dressed as maids. Polly shooed him away.
Have you seen Mr. Derby since the first day we arrived here? She asked Amari as they prepared to take the food to the main house.
Amari shook her head.
Not see, which be good. Have you ever been inside the main house? Polly asked. Then she gasped as she realized what Amari's answer would be.
Only at nighttime,
Amari replied harshly.
Oh, man, I forgot.
I not forget,
Amari stated, her voice sharp as broken glass.
Do you think Mrs. Derby knows what Clay is doing?
She know,
Amari said angrily.
Maybe she can help you,
Polly offered tentatively.
She seems to be very pleasant.
She need help herself,
Amari replied sharply. Polly tried to understand, but she couldn't truly fathom the depths of Mina's apparent distress. Slave women were always called to the bedrooms of their masters. It was simply a fact of life. Mina should understand that by now and be getting used to it. But she let the subject drop as they prepared to carry the food. Amari took a platter of venison, while Polly carried a huge glistening corn pone on another large platter. They walked carefully up the path from the kitchen to the big house and entered through the back door. Lena took one look at the two girls and rolled her eyes up to the ceiling.
Lord have mercy! We gonna get in trouble for sure! Tell Teeny if I gets a beating over this, I ain't never forgiven her! Now go on back and bring the rest of the food!
Polly and Amari dashed back several more times to get the rest of the food for supper for Mr. Derby and his wife. All of it was laid out on a sideboard to be served as Lena directed. Polly looked around the room in rapt curiosity.
Now this is where I belong, she thought with a smile.
Taking in the dark green curtains covering the windows to keep out the afternoon heat, the fine, pale green embroidered carpet decorating each floor, and the pictures of ancient Derby relatives lining the walls. Fancy silver eating and drinking utensils lay in a huge cupboard on the other side of the room. Polly had never seen such finery. Oh, how Mama would have loved this, she thought. Polly tiptoed to peek into the adjoining room, which was obviously Mr. Derby's study. She inhaled with pleasure. Shelves of leather-bound books filled one wall. She'd give anything to simply touch them. To have access to them would be heaven. Her mother had taught her to read using the Bible and occasional pieces of newsprint that came their way. But Polly longed for books of her own.
If I could get assigned to the main house, she thought, I would sneak into this room during every free moment.
She sighed and returned to the dining area, standing silently near the door of the dining room, almost like a statue, was the coachman who had driven the two girls here from the market just a few months ago. Once again, he was dressed in an elegant coat and a shirt with lace cuffs.
This here's Noah,
Lena explained. Noah nodded slightly, but continued to stand stiffly and formally.
He's the coachman, the butler,
Miss Isabel's bodyguard, and probably the fanciest house slave we got around here. Best looking, too. Lena laughed. Massa trusts him, and... She lowered her voice to a whisper. Word is that Miss Isabel done taught him how to read. He... Suddenly, Lena cleared her throat and snapped to attention. Polly and Amari did the same. Mr. Derby, dressed in a red velvet suit, escorted his now very pregnant wife into the room. Clay sauntered in behind them, gave a look of undisguised disgust to his stepmother, and sat as far away from her as he could. He seemed to be trying to get Amari's attention, Polly thought. But Amari had dropped her head and refused to look at him.
"Where's Flora?"
Mr. Derby demanded as soon as he had helped his wife be seated.
"Her mama got snake bit today, sir. Real bad. She done run to the quarters to see her,"
Lena explained quickly.
"But we got something special for your supper today, yes we do. Polly poured the wine like I showed you."
Polly hurried to obey.
"Well, I hope she's not too badly injured," Mr. Derby said irritably. "I hate it when my workers are laid up."
Mrs. Derby spoke up, although barely audibly.
"Shall I check on her tomorrow, Percival?"
"No, my dear. I really disapprove of you dealing with the servants. It's not wise in your condition, you know."
"She might need medical attention,"
Mrs. Derby suggested softly.
"I'm sure she'll be fine," her husband said. "It is you I worry about, Isabel. Right now, the most important things on my mind are your happiness and comfort," he said firmly, "and the safety of our child. I could never forgive myself if anything happened to that baby. I have not been this excited or this happy in many years."
He took her hand in his. It seemed to Polly that he gazed at his wife with genuine concern. Mrs. Derby smiled at him, touched her belly, and let the matter drop. Turning to Clay, Mr. Derby said,
"Son, run down to the quarters tomorrow and get one of the slaves from the fishing gang to take her place."
"It will be my pleasure, father," the young man replied lazily. "But why not just send Noah? He's able-bodied. Perfectly good waste of a strong worker, seems to me."
Polly saw Clay look at his stepmother with a wicked grin. Isabel Derby inhaled, then looked at her husband in alarm.
"You promised, Percival. You promised when we married that I could keep my bodyguard."
Mr. Derby's face softened as he put his arm around his wife's shoulders and gave her what seemed to be a reassuring hug.
"I think Clay is merely teasing you, my dear. I wouldn't think of upsetting you by doing such a thing. All I care about right now is your health and your happiness."
To Clay, he said,
"Try to be kinder, son. You'll have a brother or sister soon."
Clay rolled his eyes, looked at Mrs. Derby with disdain, and drank another glass of wine. It was clear to Polly that he truly disliked his stepmother. As they continued to serve the food, Amari looked nervous, so Polly tried to help her whenever she thought Amari might not understand a command. She wasn't going to let Amari spoil her chance to impress the Derbys. Noah continued to stand like a sentry at the door, never moving, never displaying any emotion. Mrs. Derby drank very little of the white wine that Amari had carefully poured for her. She had given Amari a pleasant smile, however, and had thanked her as Amari deftly slipped a white linen napkin onto Mrs. Derby's lap.
"You must eat more, my dear Isabel," Mr. Derby said to his wife. "You want our child to be healthy, don't you?"
She looked up nervously.
"Yes, of course you're right, Percival."
She motioned to Polly to put a little more corn pone on her plate, but Polly noticed she only nibbled at it.
"Please tell Teeny the supper is delicious," Mrs. Derby said to Lena.
"Now don't compliment the slaves on doing their jobs, my dear. Your kindness only makes them weak and careless."
It sounded to Polly that Mr. Derby admonished his wife almost as if he were speaking to a child.
but he also seemed to dote on her. He touched her constantly, fixing a ringlet of hair that had fallen into her face, brushing a speck from her shawl, and patting her left hand with his right. As Lena skillfully served the stew, venison, corn, and beans to the Derby family, Amari and Polly were kept busy taking plates back to the kitchen, bringing up steaming baskets of bread, and finally, a fresh-baked blackberry pie. Mrs. Derby continued to pick at her food, and her husband sometimes stopped his conversation with Clay to cut a small piece of meat for his wife so she would eat it. "Now, don't you feel better?" he would say after she had swallowed it. She would smile wanly in agreement. It seemed to Polly that he treated his wife more like a delicate possession than a real person. Any genuine conversation he seemed to save for his son. "I'm thinking we can bring in a few more slaves," he told Clay. "The rice crop will do well this year, and the market has gone up. Let's plan on making a bigger harvest next season." Clay nodded, casting another glance at Amari. "That means expanding the fields by the river. We'll need fresh Africans for that. They know rice so well." "How many do you think?" his father asked.
3 or 4 at least," Clay replied.
"They don't seem to last long out there." "Well, I'll keep my eyes open the next time I go to market," Mr. Derby said. "We best be getting them soon, so they can be broken in by planting time."
They speak about buying slaves the same way they discuss the purchase of cattle or supplies, Polly noticed, surprised at how uncomfortable that made her feel. "When I am the mistress of such a place, will I discuss the purchase of people as they do?" She was not sure of the answer.
"Do you think we'll need to sell any slaves to get money for next year's supplies?" Clay asked his father.
"Not this season, son. I've monitored the books quite closely, and I think this year we will make quite a profit without selling any property."
He seemed pleased. Property. They call the slaves property. Polly thought about the slaves she had come to know since she had come to the plantation. The thought of one of them being sold distressed her in a way she had not thought possible. Without Amari and Teeny and Tidbit, how awful it would be here, Polly suddenly realized. Clay stopped to scratch his head, then said to his father,
"I hear talk in town of folks in the North starting to speak about ending slavery."
Mr. Derby, sipping his third glass of wine, snorted,
"That will never happen. Those Northerners, they can't even grow the rice they love so much. They know nothing about how a business is run. Rice, tobacco, corn, where do they think it comes from?"
Clay, who had had even more wine than his father, leaned back on the two back legs of his chair carelessly.
"Slavery just makes good sense to me.
Anyway, our slaves are better off here than in some jungle eating bugs and slugs like savages." "Of course they are. They need us, son."
"Mr. Derby is right, isn't he? Living here has got to be better than a jungle, right?" Polly wasn't sure anymore. She could see Lena grinding her teeth in anger. She glanced over at Amari to see her reaction, but Amari stared straight ahead. Isabel Derby sat pale and quiet, her eyes cast down through most of the meal. It was as if she were one of the many room decorations. Unhappiness seemed to ooze from her like perspiration on a humid day. Polly shook her head as she realized that being a fine lady didn't necessarily mean finding joy. Clay's antagonism toward Mrs. Derby was almost palpable. He glared at her every time she picked up a spoon or wiped her lips with a linen napkin. Finally, the meal was over, and the last of the dishes were being removed. Polly, relieved that neither she nor Amari had done anything to call negative attention to themselves, congratulated herself on a successful evening.
I'm going to speak to Mrs. Derby right after dinner, Polly vowed bravely. This might be my only chance. I will offer my services as her personal assistant. Surely with the new baby she will need someone to help her. Mr. Derby finished a last glass of wine, then lit his pipe and stretched his long legs out from his chair just as Amari was walking by with the final platter of leftover blackberry pie. Amari, looking at Polly rather than the floor, tripped over his legs and fell.
No, no!
Polly breathed as the platter flipped and the pie careened to the floor. Purple-red berries splattered onto the pale carpet. There was a moment of absolute silence. Amari cowered on the floor in obvious terror. Polly, too afraid to breathe, waited for the thunderous voice of the master.
"You stupid black wench!" he roared. "Lena, go get my whip!"
Polly gasped at the same moment as Amari did. Polly knew Lena had no choice but to obey. She returned quickly and handed it to Mr. Derby, never looking at him directly. Coiled like a snake, the whip was made of leather. The tip of the lash was laced with wire. Polly inhaled and held her breath. Mr. Derby grasped the handle, drew his arm back, and fiercely brought the braided lash of it across Amari's back. She screamed, twisting with pain at his feet. Again he beat her. And again. 7 times he thrashed her. 10. 12. The back of her new housemaid uniform was ripped to shreds, stained with her blood. Polly clenched her hands into fists, furious at being so helpless and angry at her own selfishness as well. Because even though she flinched every time Amari was hit, she couldn't help but realize that this incident would forever ruin her chances of working in the main house. Lena quietly murmured words of prayer. Horror distorted Mrs. Derby's face. Clay looked surprisingly uncomfortable and agitated. Only Noah never changed his stance or facial expression. Finally, Isabel Derby got up from the table and walked over to her husband. Noticeably trembling, she grabbed his hand as he lifted to strike Amari again.
"Enough," she said quietly. "The girl has learned her lesson. Make her clean up the mess and let her be. It is distressing to me to see such a scene. It might mar our child."
Mr. Derby, as if returning from another place, shook his head and coiled the whip.
"You are right, my dear,"
he told his wife. He took a deep breath. To Polly, he said,
"I put you in charge of this ignorant African. You have failed me. It is your fault she made such a fool of herself tonight. Clean the floor, then tend to her wounds. As soon as she's healed, she goes to the rice fields to replace Hildy."
Polly bowed her head and murmured apologies that she knew Mr. Derby would not hear. She dared to look at Amari, who lay deathly still, and at the carpet stained with both blood and pie. Polly wasn't sure what to do first. She had never been so scared in her life. Mr. Derby escorted his wife out of the room then. Clay, looking quite distressed, gazed at the bleeding and unconscious Amari for a long time before following after them. Noah slowly left the room as well, as his job was protector of the master and his wife. "Vinegar," he whispered as he headed out of the door. "Vinegar will remove the stains from the carpet." Part 5. Amari. Chapter 23.
fiery pain and healing hands. Her back was on fire. Amari didn't remember being brought back to the cabin. Didn't hear Teenie's shouts or see Polly's tears. All she knew was that every breath made the pain intensify. Every movement made her gasp and scream. She was dimly aware of voices above her, of hands carefully washing the bleeding, sliced skin on her back, of cooling salves being applied. Then, mercifully, she slept. For 3 days, she hovered between the darkness and the light. She dreamed of her parents, of her little brother, of the belly of the slave ship, and of the flames that devoured her flesh. On the third morning, Amari felt gentle hands and cool water on her face. She opened her eyes and saw Polly. "Welcome back," Polly said softly.
"Water,"
Amari whispered. Polly lifted Amari's head and gave her small sips of water from a cup.
"Hurt so bad,"
Amari said next. She groaned as she tried to move.
"Yes, I know.
Let me put some more of Teenie's salve on your back. I don't know what's in it, but already the welts are starting to heal a little. At least the bleeding has stopped."
"So sorry," Amari said.
"Don't apologize. It's not your fault. Mr. Derby needs somebody to give him a stiff lashing and let him know how it feels."
She stomped back and forth in their cabin. Amari, even in her dazed state, could feel that Polly's anger was too big for the small room.
"It be better soon,"
Amari said, trying to calm Polly a bit. Polly picked up an empty wooden bucket and threw it across the floor.
"Mr. Derby is horribly cruel. He probably tripped you on purpose. How could he beat you like that? It was just a spilled pie."
"Must clean stain,"
Amari whispered, trying to move. Polly placed her hand on Amari's arm.
"Be still. Me and Lena cleaned it up so you would never know it was there. His precious carpet is unharmed." "Thank you,"
Amari breathed out.
"All you have to worry about is getting better. I never thought I'd say this, but I miss having you around."
Amari blinked with surprise. She knew how much Polly yearned to escape from the kitchen. Her desire to move on and her distaste for the work of the slaves was very apparent. Amari grimaced as she moved her head. She looked at Polly with remorse.
"Now you'll never get a chance to go to Big House."
"So sorry."
Polly placed another cool rag on Amari's head.
"You continue to surprise me, Amari. I had no idea my desires were so obvious. You watch and you learn. That is very wise."
Amari tried to nod her head, but it hurt too much. After a few moments, she asked with a slight smile,
"Teenie work you too much?"
Polly replied,
"All I have to help me is tidbit, and that's about as much help as a rabbit in the rice field."
"You sound like Teenie,"
Amari remarked quietly. At that, Polly almost laughed out loud. Amari was remembering what Mr. Derby had threatened, however.
"Rice," she said bleakly.
"He gonna send me to rice field."
She couldn't stop the tears that began to trickle down her face. Polly's face fell.
"Yes, he threatened to send you to the rice fields.
We just have to think of something to get him to change his mind. In the meantime, he won't do anything until you are well. So let's make sure your recovery is very, very slow."
Amari knew, however, that it was just a matter of time before she would be toiling in the hot sun, up to her knees in water, planting the rice, one kernel after another.
"Rice field come soon," she mumbled.
"I have to get up to the kitchen to help Teeny. I'll be back to check on you. You'll be all right for now?" Polly asked Amari, real concern in her voice. Polly's voice faded as Amari drifted in and out of reality. Dreams of sunny days with Besa and the fiery sun over the rice fields floated above her. In her haze, her mother was alive and laughing, dancing in front of her cooking fire. And strangely, she dreamed of Mrs. Derby, whose face sometimes replaced her mother's in her dreams. When she awoke, it was dark outside, and Amari could smell a hint of a pleasant, flowery scent.
"Try to sip this tea, child," Mrs. Derby's voice whispered.
Startled, Amari almost knocked the cup over as she felt her head being lifted. "What is Mrs. Derby doing here?" Amari wondered. She felt instantly embarrassed because she hadn't bathed in days. She knew her wounds and salves probably stank, and she had proved herself incapable in the master's home. The tea, which tasted faintly like peppermint, she sipped slowly.
"So sorry,"
Amari whispered.
"No, dear. I am the one who must apologize. I am so full of remorse for how badly my husband hurt you,"
Mrs. Derby replied. She continued to help Amari drink the tea until Amari felt herself drifting back to sleep. Slowly, Amari returned to the world, sipping mugs of hot liquid, eating a little of the special foods that Teeny made for her, and staying awake for several hours at a time. Tidbit hovered, trying to make Amari feel better by making little jokes and silly faces. One evening, during the second week following the beating, after an exhausted Polly had returned to their cabin, Amari felt well enough to sit up. She did not let her back touch anything, but it felt good to breathe deeply and not lie prone for the moment. She tried to stand up next, but she found she wasn't quite strong enough yet. She groaned softly as she sat back down.
"Is the pain very bad?"
Polly asked gently.
"Hurt much. Big much,"
Amari admitted.
"But it be better." "Is there anything you want me to do?"
Polly asked. Amari shook her head. There was nothing that anyone could do.
"You know Mrs. Derby came to see you every day, don't you?"
Amari nodded.
"She smelled like flowers."
"She always looked so sad," Polly commented.
"Baby come soon and she be happy,"
Amari said. Polly smiled. "She deserves someone to love." The wounds on Amari's back healed slowly, with the help of Teeny's ointment and Mrs. Derby's tea. Within another week, Amari was back to work with Polly in the kitchen. They had heard nothing more about Amari being transferred to the rice fields, so she worked as hard as she could and tried to make herself invisible to anyone in authority. Clay had not called for her since the beating, and for that she was grateful. He had, however, ordered Tidbit to deliver a bag of sweets to Amari. They had obviously been purchased in town. Why would he do this? She asked herself with a shudder. She gave the treats to Tidbit, who ate them with delight. "You feeling all right today?" Teeny asked her one morning. "You still looking like a bird that done fell out the nest." "Some better today." Amari lifted her arm up and touched one of the welts on her back. She winced.
"Hurt to touch," she said.
"The pain gonna go after a while, but them scars gonna be there forever,"
Teeny told her honestly. Amari took a deep breath.
"I know," she replied.
Teeny touched Amari gently on her head. You got a strong spirit, Mina.
Amari just shrugged. She could see no reason for having such a strong spirit, nor could she see any hope in her future. She just survived each day. However, she couldn't help but think of Afi, who kept her alive during the horrors of the voyage to this place by telling her the same thing.
Sometimes spirit die.
Amari replied quietly, while she stirred the pot on the fire. Chapter 24 Gator Bait. Clay sauntered unannounced into Teenie's kitchen one hot afternoon. Teenie, making crust for a pie, was shuttling back and forth, carefully watching over Polly, who was peeling apples, and Amari, who was stirring a mixture of apple juice and brown sugar over the fire. Tidbit sat on the floor, tracing the path of an ant in the dust of the floor with his finger. Hush Puppy growled softly, and everyone looked up. Amari cringed when she saw who had entered, the barely healed lashes on her back suddenly aching, but Clay didn't even look at her.
"Y'all better keep that vermin dog out of the kitchen where my food is prepared," he said without warning.
"Yassa," Teenie mumbled without question. "I told you to get that dog out of here," she said softly to Tidbit. "Take him out to the barn, you hear?"
"Yassam,"
the boy replied obediently as he headed to the door with the dog. Just as Tidbit got to the doorway, Clay grabbed the child, picked him up, and slung him over his shoulder. Tidbit screamed with fear, while Hush Puppy barked fiercely. With one swift movement, Clay raised one heavy boot and kicked Hush Puppy, propelling the dog out the door of the kitchen and into the yard. The dog yelped and limped away.
"What you gonna do with my boy, sir?"
Teenie asked fearfully.
To Tidbit, she said, "Hush now, child. Massa Clay ain't gonna hurt you. He just needs your help."
Her face showed she didn't believe a word she said, but Amari knew she had to calm the child so as not to provoke Clay's anger. Clay grinned.
"I have some friends visiting from Charlestown. We've decided to go alligator hunting this afternoon, and we need some gator bait."
Teenie clasped her hand to her mouth. Amari saw desperation in her eyes. Finally, Teenie said, her voice full of pleading,
"He be too young for such, sir."
"He's just the right size,"
Clay replied, patting the boy on his backside.
"He can't swim, sir,"
she implored.
"Then he'll learn today,"
Clay replied. He glanced at Amari then.
"Hey, Mina, you ever seen a gator hunt?"
Amari glanced at Teenie before saying,
"No, sir."
"Then come and watch. I want my friends to see what I got for my birthday. Besides, I have missed your company," Clay said boldly.
Amari wasn't sure what was happening or what she should do, so she looked at Teenie again. The look on Teenie's face truly frightened Amari, because for the first time since she had arrived at the plantation, Teenie looked terrified.
"Go, child," Teenie urged her. "I pray you bring my boy back alive."
"You never know," Clay said merrily. "Sometimes the gators are fast, and sometimes they are slow."
Teenie wiped her hands on her apron over and over.
"Please, sir.
Not my baby, sir."
Clay ignored her.
"Mina will return in a couple of hours with either a boy who's ripe to be gator bait again next week, or a few of his fingers and toes left over to bury."
Then he turned on his heel, and with Tidbit still over his shoulder like a sack of flour, he headed across the yard. Amari followed, wondering what new cruelty Clay had in store. Tidbit was only 4, but he knew when to keep his mouth shut. He stopped struggling and crying out, although Amari knew he had to be petrified. His eyes searched for Hush Puppy,
who lay in the yard licking his hindquarters where he had been kicked. When Tidbit saw the dog was all right, he kept his eyes on Amari as she hurried behind Clay. Clay headed down to the river, whistling and stopping occasionally to spit. Amari had always hated that particular habit. Standing near the shore of the Ashley River ahead of them, Amari could see three young men about the same age as Clay. One, dressed all in leather, stood next to a handsome black horse that stamped its hooves on the soft grass. Another, who wore an elaborate lace collar and cuffs, looked overdressed even to Amari, who had no knowledge of the fashion of rich white youth. He gazed serenely at the water. The other young man, dressed more casually, had curly red hair like the sailor who had taught her words. He tossed rocks into the water as they waited for Clay. All four of them gave off an air of superiority and power that frightened Amari. Their presence made her even more wary of what might happen. The young man with the ruffle collar held about 100-foot length of rope in his hands. Four muskets leaned against a tree, the branches of which hung over the water. Two other horses grazed nearby. Clay called out to his friends as he got close.
"Hello! Feeling like a little gator stew tonight?"
"If we're lucky," one of them replied. Evidently, the three young men thought that was so funny, they laughed uproariously. Amari understood enough English to know that Tidbit was in real trouble.
"I told you I knew where to find the best gator bait in the world," he boasted as he lowered Tidbit to the ground.
It seemed to Amari that Clay was trying a little too hard, talking a little too loudly, showing off for his friends.
"Just the right size," the owner of the black horse said as he poked Tidbit with his toe.
Tidbit cringed. Amari wanted to reach out and comfort Tidbit, but she dared not. The boy looked from Clay to each of the young men, and though his little body shook with fear, he didn't make a sound. Taking the rope from his overdressed friend, Clay gave it to Amari and ordered,
"Tie the rope around him, Mina."
"So who is this delicious slice of slave girl?"
asked the young man dressed in leather. He reached over and patted Amari on her backside. With sudden fierceness, Clay jumped between Amari and the young man who had touched her.
"Keep your hands off her," he snarled. "She is mine. That is why I named her Mina."
Amari was so surprised she dropped the rope. The leather-clad friend backed away and held up his hand.
"I have the pick of the women on my father's plantation," he said. "I was just asking who this one was."
Clay, seemingly calmer, replied,
"She was my birthday gift this year. I wanted the three of you to see her."
Again, Amari couldn't understand why Clay acted as if he was proud of her, showing her off to his friends. She felt like an animal on display, almost as bad as the day she was sold at the market. She hung her head and wished she could disappear into the waters of that river. To Amari, Clay repeated,
"Tie the boy with the rope. Make sure it is secure."
Amari nodded and hugged the trembling child as she knotted the rope. She whispered into Tidbit's ear, "Be brave, little one, and hold your breath." She stood up and reluctantly handed the rope to Clay. In control of the situation once more, Clay stooped down and said to Tidbit,
"All you must do is swim, little nigger. You hear? If you can swim faster than those gators, you get to go home to your mama. Understand?"
Tidbit quivered and nodded. He looked at Amari one last time before Clay picked him up and abruptly tossed him into the river. Clay held the rope while his friends laughed and cheered as the little boy swam for his life.
"Now would you look at that?" the tallest one called out, pointing to Tidbit struggling in the water. "The little nigger boy can swim."
Tidbit thrashed about hysterically, his tiny face wild with fear.
"I've never seen anyone move his arms and legs so fast.
Clay said, laughing.
Or let's splash in order to attract a gator soon,
another one remarked. As Amari watched Tidbit bobble in the water, for the first time since she had been captured, she felt angry enough to lash out and kill. She was sick of tears, of submission, of putting up with inhumane treatment. She knew if she couldn't do something to save Tidbit, she might explode. Finally, she could hold it in no longer. Stop! She cried hysterically. Please stop! Bring Tidbit back, please! She broke down, sobbing. Clay's three friends stopped their cheering and stared in astonishment at this slave girl who had nerve enough to try to interrupt an afternoon sport. Clay, with surprising calm, told Amari,
If you don't let us continue, your little friend is likely to get eaten. Now shut up!
He did not hit her as she expected him to. Amari, defeated, looked from Clay to his friends in utter disbelief. This was beyond her grasp. To torture a child like this. What kind of people are they? And then she saw it. The dark figure of an alligator appeared in the water near Tidbit's splashing feet. She held her breath.
Oh, look! Here comes the first gator!
Called out Clay's friend with the red curly hair. Instantly, their attention turned from Amari to the river again. In one swift motion, the laced-collared fellow snatched up his musket, cocked it, and fired.
Kaboom!
The musket shot sounded like an explosion as it was fired at the alligator. The water turned bright red as the animal rolled over in the water. The startled horses reared and pulled at the ropes that tied them to the trees.
You got him, Conrad!
Clay shouted to his friend. Amari could see only bloody water and foam in the distance. She couldn't tell if Tidbit had been shot or bit or had survived. She didn't know what she would do if she had to return to Teeny without the boy.
Good shot, one of the others called out. Pull the boy in and let him catch his breath, Clay ordered. The next gator will be mine, he said as he checked his gun.
Conrad hauled Tidbit in. The boy, dripping with blood and water, scrambled up the muddy shore next to them. He was shivering uncontrollably, but he seemed unhurt. Amari ran to him, knelt down on the muddy riverbank and hugged him tightly. As she felt his narrow shoulders shake, the fury she had felt earlier began to build once more. She wasn't sure how much more of this she could take. She whispered in her native language the same words of comfort that Afi had once told her. In spite of all you must endure, my little Tidbit, the flame of your life spirit will not leave you. Then, because she knew he would not understand what she was saying, she told him in English, You will live. You are strong. Do you understand? Tidbit nodded miserably.
Enough of that,
Clay shouted. He pulled Tidbit away from Amari, made sure the rope was still secure, and pitched the boy back into the water. This time, two alligators surfaced. Amari wanted to scream out once more, but realized she couldn't distract the hunters. They had to shoot, or Tidbit would be attacked. She wished she could run and snatch Tidbit out of the water and just disappear. Tidbit paddled furiously as the alligators circled him. Two shots exploded in the afternoon sunshine, as both Clay and one of his friends fired at the huge reptiles. Amari wondered for how much longer the child could be tortured so. Twice more Tidbit was tossed into the bloody water, and twice more he barely escaped the jaws of the hungry alligators. It seemed to Amari that the young men always waited until the last possible moment to fire. Tidbit almost seemed to be in shock by the time they finally decided their afternoon of enjoyment was over.
He could barely walk. Amari ran and picked him up.
"It is getting late,"
Clay said to his friends as he untied the rope from around Tidbit's waist,
"and this game is beginning to bore me. Let us retire to the house for supper. But I fear I no longer have a taste for gator stew."
The other three men reacted with loud laughter as they readied their horses. The one who rode the black horse reached down and hoisted Clay up so he could ride with him. Clay looked down at Amari and smiled as she tried to comfort Tidbit.
"We'll have to do this again sometime. I had fun. Didn't you?"
"Yes, sir,"
Amari mumbled. Her fists were tight as she held Tidbit.
"And Mina," he said,
his tone changing from warm to cold in an instant. She looked at him in fearful expectation.
"Don't you ever raise your voice to me again."
"No, sir. Yes, sir,"
Amari stuttered. She knew she had escaped another beating, or worse. With that, Clay and his friends headed toward the north fields where the corn was grown, whooping like children as they galloped off. Amari and Tidbit headed slowly back to the house. Neither of them spoke. Halfway there, Hush Puppy met them, limping a little, but wagging his tail energetically. Tidbit fell to the ground and buried his head in the dog's soft fur. Part 6. Polly. Chapter 25. Birth of the Baby. Early one morning, about 2 weeks later, the doorway of the kitchen was suddenly darkened by the unexpected shadow of Mr. Derby. He looked surprisingly agitated. Polly dropped the spoon she had in her hand. She watched as Amari moved swiftly to the back of the small room to try to make herself invisible. Tidbit ran behind his mother. Even the dog hid in a corner.
"Where's Lena?"
Mr. Derby roared. Teeny looked around in confusion.
"She ain't here, massa. I ain't seen Lena since last night," Teeny said truthfully.
"And what about Flora? I swear I'll kill her if she's not back at the house when I return."
"I ain't seen her neither, massa," Teeny said as she stirred the kettle wildly.
"I've been cooking all the morning. Why is it that when I need a slave, they all disappear?"
He strode across the kitchen and swept plates and platters to the floor in a fury. He stopped directly in front of Amari, who cowered at his feet.
"Why aren't you in the rice fields like I ordered?" he demanded.
Polly could see that Amari had no answer. She knew that Amari had learned that, when not given a direct order, a slave's best bet was to say nothing. Mr. Derby looked at Polly.
"Does the African understand English yet?"
"Yes, sir. A little, sir," Polly replied. "What is he going to do?" she wondered, her fear growing.
"Do you know anything about childbirth?"
he asked Polly suddenly.
"Sir?" Polly asked, confused. Then she realized Mrs. Derby must be in labor.
Mr. Derby, with concern edging his voice, said,
"Isabel is about to have the child. I have sent Noah to Charlestown for the doctor, but it will be several hours before they return."
He wrung his hands. Polly had never seen him look helpless or afraid.
"She's in a lot of pain. Can you help her?"
"Yes, sir. Of course, sir."
Polly breathed with relief. For herself and for Amari as well. Amari would not be taken to the rice swamps. At least, not today.
"And you," he said, pointing to Amari, "get up and help her. Hurry. I'll ride to the next plantation for more help."
He stormed out of the kitchen, leaving behind sudden sighs of relief.
"You ever helped birth a baby child?"
Teeny asked Polly.
Never, Polly replied frantically. What about you? Teeny asked Amari.
Yes, many, many,
Amari replied quickly. Both of you get up there and see to Miss Isabel. Here's boiled water. Hurry! Amari and Polly rushed out of the kitchen and up to the big house. Their first trip back since the night of the spilled pie. They climbed the stairs as quickly as they could without splashing the hot water and tiptoed down the highly polished wood floor of the upstairs hallway, searching for Mrs. Derby's room. Ordinarily, several slaves would be in the house, cleaning or washing, but today, oddly, there were none. Clay was nowhere to be seen either.
Oh, Lord in heaven!
They heard Mrs. Derby cry out from the first room on the right. She lay in her bed, which was surrounded on all four sides with thin linen curtains. Huge pillows surrounded her pale face. She moaned in pain as Amari and Polly entered the room and pulled back the curtains. She looked at the two girls and tried to smile weakly.
You must help me, she said, desperation in her voice. If the baby is...
She could not finish the sentence.
Yes, ma'am, Polly replied.
We will make sure you and your baby will be just fine. Polly had never been so close to a woman who was about to have a baby, and she was more than a little frightened. The smell of sweat and body fluids was overpowering.
You don't understand,
Mrs. Derby said, as another labor pain gripped her.
You must help my baby.
Baby good thing, Amari said, trying to reassure her.
Mrs. Derby inhaled sharply, cried out once more, and tightly grabbed a handful of the sheet. When the contraction passed, she said urgently,
I will die, but you must save my baby.
You not die, missus,
Amari said in her most soothing voice.
Babies be born every day.
She's talking out of her head, Polly said to Amari.
Let's help her get more comfortable. They adjusted her blankets, set up clean cloths and towels close by, and made sure the hot water was ready in the basin. Polly hoped Amari knew what to do. Amari touched Mrs. Derby's bulging belly and declared,
Baby come quick. Very soon.
The labor pains rolled faster and stronger with each contraction. Mrs. Derby was turning red with exertion and pain. The girls massaged her hands, washed her face with cool water, and helped her through each contraction by talking to her gently and quietly. Soon it was apparent that the baby had no intention of waiting for a doctor or Mr. Derby or anyone else. Mrs. Derby arched her back, screamed, and passed out. Polly lifted the blankets and saw the baby's head. She motioned to Amari, who gently eased the baby out. The infant cried, lusty, loud, and healthy. Amari held the child with a look of wonder on her face.
Beautiful baby,
Polly heard her whisper. Polly brought Amari some wet towels to clean the baby off. It was a little girl, with bright green eyes like her mother and curly dark hair. Then she froze, her hand still extended.
Oh, my Lord!
Polly exclaimed.
The child is black!
Chapter 26 Facing Mr. Derby.
Black baby, white mama. Big trouble,
Amari said, with fear tightening her voice, as she carefully washed the child and wrapped her.